I want to give acknowledgement because it takes a village, and a lot of you have leaned in. We were just in Cincinnati. We had two mayors, well, the former mayor and the current mayor. And then we'll be up in Cleveland later this year. This is a special place. Ohio is, as Lieutenant Governor told us last year, what did he say? It was like number 37, 38. You know, people didn't even want to have a meeting 30 years ago. We got hit in the gut. Now, my home county, we have Intel coming on, which we're going to talk about here with the Zeitgeist panel. This is a whole, and it's gone from strength to strength, right? But we're not there yet. And there's a thing, what could get in the way of the growth of Central Ohio? And a lot of that is people. We have to upskill and actually recruit people from New York or people from wherever. So we're going to hear about all that today. But without further ado, Wolf Starr, if you're somewhere, there you go.
Thank you. It's really exciting. I've had an amazing couple of days with so many of you, from Cincinnati to last night on that rooftop to, well, I missed the after party, but I heard everyone had a really nice time. When Mark asked me who should be sitting on this panel representing Columbus talking about the future, I immediately thought about some dear friends of mine, which have been doing some incredible things locally as well as nationally. I wanted to give them the opportunity to sort of talk about what they've been doing. And then also, I want to, luckily we have our resident expert with us, discuss what the future is going to look like for Columbus now that we've got Intel here, and what changes that will have and the implications. And so I figured we could start off by just passing the mic around, doing some quick introductions, who you are, who you know, and Mark and I will bounce us back and forth, and we're just going to have a really fun time to kick off Columbus, so I'm so glad you're all here.
Thank you. I'm Janann Glasgow George. Good to meet you. I'm a patent attorney, sort of recovered engineer, and also software entrepreneur. I'm based in the Raleigh-Durham RTP, North Carolina area, and it's a pleasure to be here. We've done some research on Intel and also on the technology areas that Intel will impact now and going forward.
I can say good morning still. I think it's before then. My name is Johanan Terrell. They call me Yogi. I am the owner and partner of Warhol and Wall Street, which is a consultant firm here in Columbus, Ohio, and also the director of the Columbus Fashion Alliance. Columbus is the third largest fashion capital in the country, and so we are really looking at building a new ecosystem around fashion here, leveraging technology with workforce development and education to really be the future of where the fashion industry is at right now. So building a new economy around that here in Columbus, Ohio, Central Ohio.
Good morning, everybody. Great to be with you. I'm Frank Sasso. I'm the president of Kaufman Development. We're a mixed-use real estate development company. Probably my most important bullet in my bio is that I'm a friend of Wolf's, which you'll hear from almost everybody in Columbus, so it's not that unique. And we are working on a project called the Gravity Project, which is a major neighborhood, multi-phase, mixed-use development. It happens to sit in an opportunity zone right next door to where Yogi's great team does all their work. And we happen to have a number of local and regional and some national family offices that we're fortunate to have as investors in our project.
So really quick, and we'll come back around. Frank, can you tell us a little bit about the Franklinton neighborhood, which you're in? Last night, everyone was in the Arena District. They got a chance to see that part of downtown. But I know Franklinton is really important, and you're a big part of that. So I'd love to hear from both you and then Yogi on what Franklinton is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can touch on it and definitely want Yogi to chime in on this too. So Franklinton, and I believe tonight, Wolf, or tomorrow night, they'll be at a reception at Gravity?
Tomorrow morning. 11 o'clock, the session's on the Gravity rooftop.
Great. So hopefully weather will hold off, and you'll get some great views of downtown. But the neighborhood, Franklinton, was actually the first settlement in Central Ohio. And for decades and decades, it was where people came and started businesses, started families, built and grew the community. And then there were floods, many floods over many, many decades, and the area became known as the Bottoms. If you look at it where it sits from a topography standpoint, it's prone to flooding. much like the Gulch in Nashville, if you're familiar with that area, and a lot of other places around the country. And it saw decades and decades of neglect, underinvestment, poverty, crime. It is a severely distressed census tract. But it had this rich history and continues to have a rich history of people who have lived there, multi-generational homeowners, business owners, people starting new enterprises. Anyway, fast forward, the Army Corps built a flood wall in the early 2000s and everyone thought, oh, this neighborhood's gonna blow up, all this real estate. Nothing happened, right? Nothing happened. And what it took was a concerted effort by the City of Columbus, Mayor Coleman at the time, who was mayor for 18 years, had the vision, put a master plan together, put a lot of incentives in place, and really great, smart, creative people, Yogi being one of them, came into the neighborhood and started doing really exciting stuff. And that gave us the palette on which we felt we could create these multi-$100 million mixed-use developments. You can't just plop those in anywhere. And the creative energy and the activity that's been really organic in Franklinton has given us the confidence to continue to invest in the neighborhood. So maybe that's a good segue.
Yeah, to add to everything, I mean, you're right, you're spot on, Frank. I think the uniqueness about, you know, Franklinton is that it is really where the art and creativity and things are made. So we know we have an arts district, Short North, where a lot of the art is shown, right? It is exhibited, but Franklinton really is a maker's culture. The whole community is really a roll up your sleeves community. And you know, we're bringing innovation there now too as well. So I believe what we're seeing now as we move into the future is that you're starting to have pathways for people. So you have places to make, places to create, but then you also have places to, you know, open up your first store or flexible living options so that, you know, creatives can come from all over to engage into the community. But the thing about Franklinton is it still remains to this day, still very community, you know, driven. Every Franklinton Friday, you get thousands of people out. It's just very connected, and it doesn't feel, you know, it feels inspirational as a neighborhood. It's very, very inspirational, very creative.
Awesome. Then to build upon that, let's talk about how Franklinton exists within the greater context and of all of Central Ohio. Frank, I know you've got properties all over the place, and not just here locally, but also some in other places. How does the spot which Franklinton is in relate to the rest of the entire Central Ohio ecosystem? And where else are you excited about is a good question.
Sure, great. Well, I think one of the things that maybe you've gotten a sense of already is that while Columbus Metro is relatively spread out, Columbus proper is all pretty well connected. So like a lot of great cities, Columbus is blessed with so many really cool and interesting neighborhoods, but they're all really walkable. And I think that's kind of unique. There aren't these big geographical or space boundaries. You can really walk from, in fact, Wolf and I were talking a few minutes ago and I walked down here from our office in the Short North, which is the next neighborhood up. And Franklinton sits directly west of downtown. So it's right across the Scioto River from downtown Columbus. It sits on a peninsula. It happens to house the number one science museum for, I think, 11 years running, COSI, Center of Science and Industry, and many, many other things. So we're super excited about that. I think for us, at least for the next many, many years to come, we see future phases of gravity happening here in Columbus. I think it's pretty unique to find these op zone neighborhoods that are as well located, that have as much of the kind of grassroots community energy that Franklinton has. And for us, that's kind of the special sauce, where we don't feel like we're coming in and we're just building a bunch of stuff and you know, certainly we're not in making any kind of effort to explore what's around there and partner with what's around there. What's unique in Columbus, or in Franklinton in particular, is there's so much good energy to partner with. And so we can build on sites that are currently vacant, bring in energy, bring in partnerships. We just launched a partnership with Columbus Fashion Alliance, Yogi's Venture, to do pop-up retail and give a place for their creators and their makers and their brands to display in a physical space that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do given cost of rent and everything else. So that's just one example of many why we think it's kind of special. But if you have a Franklinton-like neighborhood in your area, give us a call.
And Yogi, as far as your new fashion project, which isn't that new anymore, but I've known you for so long that it feels as though it's the newest star in our solar system. I guess, how do you work with other corporations, other organizations, to be able to bolster your work, specifically here in Central Ohio?
Yeah, so the Columbus Fashion Initiative really is what we launched in 2020. The nonprofit was formed in 2019, but the Columbus Fashion Initiative is really a strategic plan built around building a new ecosystem based around the fashion industry here. So as me and Wolf are serving on the Create Columbus Commission, like Frank said, Wolf is like the unofficial mayor of the city, so everybody knows Wolf. But we were on the Create Columbus Commission together, and we talked about building pulse in our city and how are we, looking at some of our top industries and reimagining the city. So when we found out Columbus was the third largest fashion industry in the country, we really looked at what opportunities, really are there within this city. And so the initiative was based off of that. And so now we call the organization the Columbus Fashion Alliance, and that's because it's an alliance of public and private partners, from our retailers to our civic partners, the city, the county, to our educational partners, CCAD, the Ohio State University, and then also the culture, right? The fashion culture here, creatives, makers. So this alliance is now coming together to look at, how do we reimagine the fashion industry here? Specialty retails is what really made Columbus and gave Columbus that third largest fashion industry, but now how do we take that and bring it down into the culture? How do we, build pathways from the ground up, whether that's educating our youth or creating spaces for, creatives to, have their first brick and mortar or get to market quicker. So we partner with so many different organizations as part of that. Like I said, we have, the directors of some of the biggest retailers in the city, from Victoria's Secrets to Justice to DSW that are on our board. But then we also have, our educational partners and creatives on the board as well, too. So this alliance is really growing, and we're very excited about what's happening here in the near future.
I think that's a perfect transition to talk about Janann's experience.
I wonder if I could add on. I'm feeling the gravitational pull here. And one of the things that we see as a trend is integration across areas. So talking about fashion, and you've mentioned the real estate development and tech and science, there was a bridge over with the tech side and software to NFTs and fashion. So I wonder if I might affect some gravitational pull and pull a software Columbus native, Kevin Lloyd, up to talk a little bit about what the software and programming and training that's happening, because NFTs can help expand and accelerate the attraction to Columbus, right? It will give you global reach. And into metaverse, et cetera, which I think we may talk on later. But if I could pull Kevin up also. Yeah. Awesome.
Hey. Good morning, everyone. And thanks, Janann, for the opportunity. So clearly, I think everybody knows that here in Columbus, from a startup perspective and a tech standpoint, we've been identified as the up-and-coming startup city. And I think there's a huge opportunity as we talk about the alliance and everything that's going on from a technological standpoint. So I actually own a tech startup. It's called Miles, hence for Make Your Life Entertaining. And it's a software-based entertainment software and lifestyle data analytics company. And it's a great opportunity for us to be in this space right now with all of the growth and everything that's happening in the city. And as Janann just mentioned, right now, when you take a look at the NFTs, what's going on from an NFT standpoint, what's going on from a metaverse standpoint, and I know last night Joseph and I were having a lot of conversation about Web3 and things like that, it's a huge and massive opportunity here in Columbus. One of the things that we're doing here, one of the ventures I'm involved in, is actually preparing people to actually develop that software. So we're actually developing coders through color-coded labs to be able to fill some of these opportunities and be a part of the future of Columbus, and not just here, but throughout Ohio and throughout the country as well.
Thank you.
Which is something we're going to talk about on the next panel, the talent, like what's so special and what does Columbus need to keep developing.
It's an interesting thing, though. Columbus seems to have every ingredient to have this gravitational pull.
The creative side, the culture side, the technology side, the science side, and the sort of already vibrant economy and a history of being able to support the growth. So we think obviously we'll see big impact from Intel coming as another big gravitational force into the region.
Right. So what I would say is this. We want to talk about Intel, but what I asked the mayor of Cincinnati and that panel, our themes are what scares and excites you. So let's just go down the row and don't necessarily talk your book. Be bigger picture about Central Ohio, where it could go 5, 10, 15 years from now. Like what it can be, what you want it to be. And then what could get in the way? So maybe I'll have the real estate developer, or do you want to? You have a gravitational pull on this one?
I have a little bit. It's pulling the mic for sure. I'll just share from our experience. What would frighten me for Ohio here is one thing we experienced in Research Triangle Park, Raleigh-Durham in North Carolina, is not preparing for success. For infrastructure. So it's the education system, the schools, the transportation system. So this is a time for vision of success to prepare the groundwork for the future, right? So also the autonomous corridors, edge computing will play a huge role in data collection, smart city infrastructure, so smarter services, more efficient, serving the needs of everyone. That planning has to happen now. So my greatest excitement would be it's done. Greatest fear, not planning for success. Or down to real estate, so thank you.
Okay, interesting question. I happen to go to college with the mayor of Cincinnati. He's great.
Oh, so yeah?
I'll have to ask him what his answer was to this and see how it compares. But, I'll start with the positive. So what excites me is I think we have the right leadership in Columbus to tackle this the right way, from our mayor's office to the Columbus Partnership, One Columbus, on down the line that ties in with the state organizations like Jobs Ohio, all these people that were instrumental in bringing Intel here. And so I think if you're gonna tackle all the challenges that come with growth, you know, having a city, county, state, and civic associations that don't fight with each other is like not a bad place to start. You know, when you think about the rest of the country, there's a lot of places where those groups just don't even get along at all. They just fight. And so, you know, that you're starting from a kind of a bad place. It doesn't mean we're going to get it right or even mostly right, but at least we have some of the conditions that you would need. We had somebody in town months ago from Tampa who was talking about their growth trajectory. And he goes, you know, you guys have something that's really special. I was like, what's that? I thought of a lot of things. He goes, I-270. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, you got the outer belt. We didn't have one of those when Tampa started to explode. So to your point on infrastructure, I think, you know, not to say we got a lot of work to do, but I think we're not starting from a bad place. So that is what gives me encouragement. What I would say gives me the most concern is that these are really complex issues. You know, housing affordability, education, childcare. These things are like really complex, and they take people sitting down and understanding each other and wanting to get curious and wanting to be intellectually honest with each other and dig in. And you know, some days you wake up, you look at the news, and you feel like that's in short supply. I am hopeful that people can do the work and dig in and understand things, and I am hopeful that people realize that we need density, we need transit, we need more housing of all different types to accommodate the growth, because people are moving here much like you experienced in Raleigh-Durham. I lived in Seattle in the early 2000s for a couple years, and people would be like, oh, it's not what it used to be. And that was when Amazon was in an old schoolhouse south of downtown. That was their physical presence when I was living in Seattle. Now it's an entire neighborhood. It's crazy. And so I don't think people appreciate that it's coming whether we want it to or not. And most people thankfully do want it here. So what are we gonna do about it? How are we gonna be smart? How are we gonna work together? And how are we gonna make some big, bold moves? Because I think that's what it's gonna take.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I think kind of to piggyback off what you said as far as what concerns me is being reactionary instead of proactive to these opportunities. You know, we, like you said, we've seen it happen in other cities where they're not prepared, they're not thinking in advance, and then all of a sudden you see so much displacement, so much, you know, rapid growth, and we are already a city that is experiencing growth, and then we just put a little bit more gas on that with the intel piece. So I think the signs are there for us to be very proactive, and I think the opportunities in being proactive are we're able to look at this and say, how can strong partnerships, you think about radical collaboration, but how can those strong partnerships help address some of these problems, right? Some of the things. So is it, and as we're looking at this opportunity with Intel, we were talking about this the other day, you know, we want to make sure that we're, you know, pulling them into the city, into the core. So is it, you know, radical ideas for helping affordable housing and helping, you know, educate the next generation so that they're able to get some of these jobs? Some of the things I get excited about is, you know, with this new economy that we're building through the fashion initiative, it is about bridging the gap between technology and fashion. In the fashion industry as a whole, globally, there's a big push for bringing more manufacturing to the US. But we know that we're not going to be able to do that in the methods that are done overseas, right? So here there's this perfect opportunity to kind of marriage technology and workforce development to bring smart manufacturing to this market. So I think finding ways to tap into Intel, which, you know, if anybody's ever watched Project Runway, you'll see that Intel was a sponsor of Project Runway. So things like that is on their radar. So how do we look at that and say, hey, you know, bring and having them be a part of what's exciting to our city, having them be a part of what we're pulsing on, so that gives more intention about them being here, not just being located here, but they're integrated into what we're trying to move forward, and they have a place for it. You know, we can use that technology and use those chips to power that next generation of smart manufacturing. So I see opportunities like that, and then I think, like you said, just preparing will help us at least try to address some of the things that we know will come and issues we know we'll face with that growth.
Maybe, Janine, that...
I think I do get another gravitational pull. The entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurship will help support the growth. And then where's the support for entrepreneurs? The venture capital, the angel investment, the early stage, the mentors, mentoring and giving back to the community. You guys are very strong on that. But I think watching to ensure that the private investment community keeps pace with the entrepreneurial growth.
And we've seen how that, we know Cincinnati better than Columbus. And I've been hearing since he's got the edge, Columbus is pulling strong and Cleveland isn't really a venture town. How do you, that's a very broad stroke, but how do you guys see the innovation so critical? How do you see the ecosystem here? Mr. Ecosystem Builder, right?
Yeah, let me come back. I want to answer that question in regards to Columbus though, real fast. On the excitement side, this is a land of opportunity for us right now. And it's been said multiple times, the next 15 years in Columbus is probably gonna be more impactful than the next 100 years after that. So when you think about the potential and opportunity here, this is a grand opportunity for people who are here locally, but those who are outside of the city as well to invest in what's gonna happen here. The concern would be the strategy piece, right, as it was mentioned earlier. So with the Link Us project, which is our fast rail piece, we have done a great job of connecting with other cities, learning from them, putting together a great plan of how we would proceed with that. I think we need to do the exact same thing. When you think about cities like Atlanta, you think about Orlando, you think about Tampa, like how fast they grew because of industry, that's what we're going to experience. So it's not like we have to recreate the wheel. I think it's about us learning from those that have had that explosive growth, learning what they learned and trying to avoid the mistakes. So I think we're well positioned to do that. And then the other part of this is Columbus is one of the most diverse cities in the country. Yogi knows we started a campaign about almost 20 years ago to highlight that. And it's like it's coming full circle right now. So leveraging the uniqueness of our city is really, really important as well, and making sure that the economic growth is.
Investment ecosystem, venture capital.
Yeah. So on the VC side, going back to what you said, yes, I would agree. Cincinnati seems to have the ecosystem in Cincinnati is definitely ahead of where we are in Columbus, right? So if you think about it, they have Union Hall. What I see down there is the combination between your startups and your major Fortune 500 companies and how they work together. They literally work to help them grow. They are their first customers, second customers. They're on their boards. They really help them. We have to build that in Columbus. That is an opportunity for, so even though we've done well from a startup perspective, we've seen significant growth. Columbus is the capital, things are happening. When you look at that collaboration, it's not quite there yet. So I think that that's the opportunity for us.
Do you have the equivalent of Queen City Angels?
There is Tech Angels here in Columbus, but when I see what's happening with Queen Cities and their engagement across the board, it seems like they're much more involved, much more aggressive than what we're seeing right here. But Tech Angels does exist here currently.
And can I pull an audible and bring you up here?
Sure.
Just to have a, she's from Central Ohio. We're both from Central.
Use audibles.
Ann said, I got it.
We got this.
There you go.
There you go.
He's bringing it in.
Just
don't,
some of you may not
know.
Don't
you dare leave. This is not one in, one out woman. Hey, girl power.
That's right.
So just to put context on this dynamic person over here, we just, with your help, Ann, we've raised about $7.5 million to be a feeder into Queen City Angels. And then we'd look to be a value-adding investor there. And I know you like Central Ohio too, so maybe you could just talk about what Queen City Angels is and how we could maybe build bridges with the Columbus community.
Yeah, I'm passionate about a lot of things, and you've touched on one that's near and dear to my heart, beyond 361, and I think that there's a huge opportunity to create connectivity there, as you alluded. So I'm a member of Queen City Angels, and we're an angel investing group based in Cincinnati, Ohio, that by CB Insights is ranked number 2 out of the 272 real institutional grade level angel groups in the country. And I'm proud of that, and I can see why. If you look at the 178-page standards and practices guide of how we evaluate companies, it speaks volume. It's McKinsey-esque level approach to creating a standardized approach to the way we look at our startup opportunities, investment opportunities. So when I joined 6 years ago, there were 52 members. There were 2 women. Right now, there are over 170 members. Pardon me, my back was to you. I don't like that. Now, I was on the Diversity and Inclusion Committee and the Marketing Committee, and we're now over 170 members, and our gender representation, not yet racial, I hate to say, but we're not there yet, exceeds the national averages in terms of representation. So I'm thrilled with that. And what Jack Wyant and I did recently in partnership with Stephen Burke and Mark Sanner is we said, wow, you know, we've got all of these 361 new best friends, as we like to say, our new BFFs, and we've got this fund that's been open for 3 years for various reasons. We hadn't gotten the state money in, et cetera. We had 27 portfolio companies, and it's like, well, wait a minute, it's not closed. We could actually bring new money in, bring investors from 361 in. They can see the whole portfolio. We've got results from 2021. These 27 portfolio companies that we had collectively had $56 million in revenue. $56 million for an average of $2.1 million in revenue. If you projected 5 years out with their returns, with their projections, and actually the newest numbers that we've pulled for our May report, it's even higher than this. But it was like $888 million in revenue, projected exit year revenue. It's like, well, okay, well, that might sound ridiculous. So let's give it a haircut by 50%. So that's still $444 million. And if you look at the return, that's a 4.5 to 5X return. Well, our latest results that we've just looked at actually are projecting to a 6X return. For these portfolio companies. And what's the opportunity? We've raised this money. Yeah, I'm done.
I feel like I got FINRA on my shoulder.
What do I have? Oh, I got it. Oh, no.
Because with all the caveats and disclosures, you know, those are directional, and we hope it all happens.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Jeez. Okay. That's good. Thank you for that, because I'm not expert in that. I just am passionate and enthusiastic.
Personal opinion.
Personal opinion only, et cetera. No, but it's exciting because we think that this creates an opportunity for engagement, an easy way for our 361 family members to say, we're excited, we see that bridge, we want to be involved, and there's a way. There's still a way for you to do that that we can talk about offline.
I have a question. Why not share those best practices and seed that angel group here in Columbus?
I think that that's a really great idea, and that's something that the leadership of QCA could be engaged upon to deliver. Yeah, I'm happy to provide that that linkage, and Mark can too because Mark's a member.
I will say, as far as our firm is concerned, QCA has been more and more helpful every time we come on down, every time we have a conversation. Did want to point out that with all of our funds, we find that we also raise just as much money outside of Ohio to bring money into Ohio. And that's something which has been a core tenet, which we borrowed from you.
Yeah.
And I would love if you could just briefly touch on what you have done to create more emerging angels through QCA with your two programs.
Wolf, that's a great question. That was one of the key things in going from membership of 52 members to over 170. We did. We applied some of those P&G brand building and consumer research principles, and we said, let's understand what's going on. Like, what are the barriers to people getting involved? And one of the key barriers was awareness, education, and access. The third A, access. That was about like, well, wait, if you're going to be a QCA member, then there was a handshake deal on a very large chunk of commitment that you'd make into investing in startups. Well, if you know anything about marketing, point of market entry, that kind of barrier can be, you know, for a lot of people if you're trying to create access. So we said, you know what, we're going to create a junior membership, and we're going to put a haircut on that commitment to $25,000. I mean, and for that, you get education. We have a whole education curriculum. It's astounding. So it was so good that I was 6 months into my Ascent, we call it the Ascent membership. I got involved in so many things that I just naturally matriculated to a full membership because I was so involved and I was so engaged and passionate about it. And I think the next thing that we've got to solve at QCA is we've got all of these Ascent members. We need to drive fuller engagement. And when you get them engaged, then they're going to, I believe, naturally matriculate to full membership. And that's the pain point that I want to help them solve.
Another thing which I've really loved about QCA, and this relates back to our three Columbus friends on the stage, is you've created pathways where people who are not full-time VCs or full-time angels are able to dip their toes in. I mean, we've all had conversations around, you know, coffee shops and bars about how we need to be able to curate that next generation. And when we're looking at the companies which we invest in, we let them know that there is an expectation that their money, once they have that great exit, is going to go towards supporting the next generation of leadership. So. I'd love to hop over to Kevin really quick to talk about where you think the investment community, the conversation will be 10, 15 years from now once you've had your first couple of exits.
Yeah, I think that we're poised right now, right? There's a number of entrepreneurs in this market, and I feel like there's truly an ecosystem, including Yogi's business with CFA. There's a number of entrepreneurs that have amazing ideas. And what we're doing now is we're learning, right, the process for investment, how to actually gain capital investment in order to grow our businesses and scale our businesses. And the good thing is we're seeing other companies that are IPOing or exiting, so that foundation is being established. So I think over the next 10 or 15 years, we're going to have an enormous amount of success. I think we're going to see the diversity piece come into play as well, right, which is going to be really big. So I think there's going to be a lot of companies that do extremely well. And the cool part about it is it's diverse in industry. Everything from, you know, fashion to technology to software, I'm talking to some restaurateurs right now that have some amazing ideas around scaling some technology-based industry or components in their industry. right? So they are the experts, and now they want to leverage technology to grow their business and change the restaurant industry completely. So I think a lot of that is on the horizon. I'm excited to see it happen.
When do you think you'll hit critical mass?
It's literally, you mean as a market?
Critical mass of that group, that the VC, the startup.
I still think it's going to take a little time.
For the tape, repeat your question.
Oh yeah, so when do we believe we'll see critical mass? I think we're still probably a good 7 to 10 years out at this point. We're still early, yeah.
And this is one of the conversations, as are all of our conversations, which we'll be continuing later, specifically Janann, you've got so much experience as an angel and an LP that I really wanna hear your experience on how you've seen it in other markets. But for the sake of time, and we definitely want to give some time for a couple of questions, could you talk about Intel and how that can help expedite this process here in Columbus?
Sure, absolutely. Because they will bring critical mass, the large companies bring people, right, with executives, people with different areas of expertise. Here it's manufacturing as well. So that will naturally draw and attract the supporting companies that they need to deliver everything. It will not only be in technology or science, though, but all of the supporting services, the entertainment, the creative side. But because that they are there, all of this will naturally draw others from outside in. So we will expect to see that growth start now. It's already started before Intel is like broken the ground or began really delivering on the first fab. But because of the commitment for 10 years, one per year for 10 years, we should be expecting to see exponential growth here, not linear. And so Intel will anchor that, and I believe probably draw other majors to the area. Is that a quick answer?
I think you showed me a slide. Are we going to?
If Inessa can pull up the slide, just to give you a sense of what that means specifically, it's an edge computing technology sector. Hang in there with me.
There it is.
We look at patent data. This is from the edge computing software platform side. And you see here, Intel is number one for investment in patents in the US here. You recognize the other names, Cisco, Akamai, Verizon, IBM, AT&T, Apple, for example. But in the middle there, you see Inventor. That's like unassigned early stage companies. Now, this is just the number of patents. That's like proxy for R&D investment, right, in this area. This is national. If you go to the next one, Inessa, there's a bigger story. All of these circles represent Intel's large investment. The timeline is hard to see here, but the outer edge there is the most recent. So it's really been their investment in the last 5 years that's been exponential. And if you consider then what's happening around that from a patent data standpoint, what we see are the smaller entities, like a company EdgeX based in Raleigh that does edge computing low latency. The IoT sector is going to build up on these platforms, right? That's developers. It's small shops. It's single apps. This is going to cause that exponential growth. So this is illustrative of Intel's more recent investment in this area. These will be chips in everything, right? There'll be over 1 trillion connected devices in less than 10 years. So obviously that's nationally, not just Ohio. The autonomy corridor, the autonomous vehicle corridor that you have here will require edge computing. So these are entire market sectors that will be drawn to this area and to Intel's investment here. A little data to back it up. There are others, Metaverse and others.
And I dealt with Intel, believe it or not, in Russia. I was in Russia for 8 years, and they invested in the ecosystem of, and they made a ton of money on these companies like Mail.ru, like the equivalent of Amazon. And that was, they did well, but the main thing is that they were looking to more IoT, more Intel chips. But you're gonna see Intel Capital they're gonna be in a lot of these funds. It's going to be another ripple effect.
That's right. I think their venture arm, of course, and then just the partnerships, because the ability to do business with them, even in the factory, right? There's going to be the robotics and the edge computing required there, for example.
So maybe we just open up, either you people have their view of Central Ohio or questions about Central Ohio.
What do you think?
Any gravitational pull?
I'd like a beer, please.
No, I get the beer.
Hashtag gravitational pull.
Right. Any questions about Ohio or comments? You want to make a comment? Or anybody have any insight on Intel?
Cedric in the background. All right, love
it. It must be coming your way. Good morning, everybody. I'm Cedric Riley, and I just wanted to say I definitely am receiving the narrative that you guys are providing about the promise of Intel in Columbus and how what you guys are doing could potentially align with the impact of Intel and all these things combining to make Columbus a first-class city in America. So I look forward to more conversation with you all. I'm in total agreement. I do see us all in a forecasting space and figuring out ways that we can all work together to become a best-in-class city. I'm a New Yorker also, so really looking forward to what Columbus has to offer.
Maybe a question for the audience. How many of you have invested in Ohio? How many of you are doing that? Show of hands. Great. How many want to? Yes. Okay, that's everybody. Great, we're done.
Mic drop.
One more question over here from Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Truebridge, and a lot of my work is in education. So I just want to make a comment of how important it is that you talk about the secondary services and support services that are going to be needed when a big company comes in with children, childcare issues, education issues, and with education being one of the number one issues that people are concerned about. It'll be exciting to see what innovative opportunities you provide for not only the students, but the educators themselves. So I'd love to talk to anybody. I'm in research, policy, and practice with education.
Does anyone want to speak to that? Like, where does Columbus Public Schools, how do they rank? What do they need? I always say no politics. That's always obviously embedded with politics. Anybody speak to that? And
I guess one thing I'll just add on it that may not be specific to Columbus yet, but this idea of experiential learning, right? There's so much that is not just in the classroom, but it is really about how we train up the young people, the next generation, by doing, by bringing them along, by letting them experience the day in the factory, the day in the investment diligence room, et cetera. And so we would encourage that the curricula incorporate experiential learning techniques, not just for college and university or community college, but for high school and even younger, right?
Anne, did you plant that question? Did you plant that comment? She's the director of experiential learning.
Director of experiential learning at Xavier since February. So it seems like a plant, but it was not.
I'm excited that you brought that up, and thank you for bringing that up too, because I agree with you, especially with Intel coming in, but all these other opportunities coming in. How do we provide an opportunity for our students to get on those pathways? And as I mentioned before, I have a consulting firm, and our firm is actually working with, it's called Ohio Excels. It's an initiative, Chase-funded grant initiative for Columbus to get kids on their pathway into IT and healthcare. So when they approached us about it, our strategy towards it was experiential based. We had a ton of meetings and discovery sessions with the students, and again, unlike us when we were younger, these students, they want experiences, they want hands-on. So the theme that came out of that is called Discover, and it's all about finding purpose instead of telling people, you need to get a job, you need to grow up, go to school, get a job. It's like, explore, take time to explore, get your hands dirty, mess with some things, and then let that kind of be your guide to get on that pathway into IT. And so we want to get them, a lot of students don't even know when they think of IT, they think cable guy. You know, they think it's a, I got some rope around my waist and I got a ladder, and that's what we're trying to show them, from gaming to the metaverse. Like, all of that stuff is a part of that. And so we're definitely going in that direction. So that is something very hopeful to look forward to, because this initiative just started this past year. Yeah, sure.
Well, I know we're gonna talk about education in many ways. John, you have a question?
Oh yeah, just bouncing off of that.
All right, sure. Let people know.
I usually don't need it. I'm pretty loud. My name is John Havens. I'm a principal at a third-generation family office in town, and also kind of really involved in the trades, specifically home services, plumbing, HVAC, drain cleaning. And so we have locations in Cleveland, Columbus, and Dayton, and expanding outward, specifically in Ohio. And so if you could talk a little bit about, specifically Frank, you know, you're in the construction, real estate development. With all of this growth, there's a significant problem with finding people in the trades and getting people into the trades, where, you know, our employees, for example, have 100% healthcare coverage, can make well over $100,000 a year. You're paid immediately for your schooling, as opposed to, you know, coming out of school in debt. And I think one of the challenges we're going to run into and are currently running into, specifically with all this growth, I don't know if anybody's tried to get a contractor or anything recently, you know, you're a year out if you're lucky. So that's our biggest challenge. We have more work than we can get to. We just don't have the people. And, you know, we have to grow our own. We have 30 apprentices just in Columbus currently. So if you guys could speak to that a little bit, it's the unsexy kind of swept under the rug part of the workforce that is yet the most essential for our day-to-day lives. It can't be digitized. It can't be automated. And I guarantee you, if your TV goes out and your toilet breaks, I know which one you're calling to get fixed first. So if you guys could speak to that a little bit, I'd be very interested to hear.
Yeah, I'm curious, which is it, TV or toilet? I don't know. I am curious about that. I think, I'm gonna go toilet, but it's personal choice. I appreciate the question, because I think that it is I think we've done a disservice in this country for the last many, many decades of saying the only option is to go to college. You got to go to college. You got to go to college. You got to go to college. The reality is, everything you just said is exactly right. You'll see tomorrow morning, we have a $200 million project under construction called Gravity Project Phase 2. There are probably 250 plumbers, electricians, framers, all those guys. Many of those guys are making, you know, six figures a year, full health coverage, making great money, have way more work than they could ever get to. And it is a great option for a lot of kids coming out of high school. And so we've got to do a better job. And there are really good groups in town doing some of this right now. There are a lot of private contractors that have just done it out of necessity, said, hey, we're going to do an apprenticeship program. We're going to put money to it. Frankly, it's an existential threat to your business to not do it. And you can't wait around for, you know, hoping that the state or the city or county will catch up, but they're going to need to. Getting back to the Intel question, I get a lot of calls from people over the last couple months and my network around the country of saying, oh, this is such great news. Aren't you excited about Intel? And I'm like, yeah, kind of, but it's going to stink for the next 3-4 years, because the reality is, if you're any kind of trade, if you're any kind of subcontractor, there's no way us guys who build multifamily buildings and office buildings and retail buildings can pay you what they can pay you out there to get their facility built. And it's going to suck all that talent. So my concern, going back to what scares you, is that we have a multi-year dearth of new inventory, which would exacerbate an already severe housing shortage. I hope I'm wrong about that. I'm still trying to figure out why I'm going to be wrong about that. I'm sure there's someone smarter in here than me that can tell me, but that is what I'm concerned about. I think long-term it's great, but you only have so many people here to build this stuff. So if anyone wants to add on to that.
I do. I have a question relative to that. It's like, so how do we accelerate getting the talent that you need, that we need to actually accommodate this growth, this enormous growth, and what would have to be true?
I have a quick thought
on it. Sure, sure. If we look at what's happened in other industries like nursing, you draw them from other states, you draw them even from other countries sometimes, but certainly other states that aren't experiencing the growth. Again, we've seen that with nursing, we've seen that with healthcare specifically, and there's no reason not to import this talent.
I want to add to that real quick. One of the things we've talked about is that we have to manufacture what we need, right? So sometimes we see it coming, it's like, so what do you do about it? Like, man, you create what you see as a gap, and I would agree that we need to export where it needs to be exported. We need to highlight the benefits and the features of the city, right? Because this is new and fresh for a lot of people. So I think we have to create that compelling message and go get the talent that we need. Then also, we have a number of major universities here, right? So we have Ohio State, we have Denison, we have Central State and Wilberforce down the road. So we need to leverage the fact that we already have talent in this area, and we need to retain that talent and make it really compelling for them as well.
Make plumbing sexy again.
Vlad has a question over here. One second.
Not a question, just a comment.
Or comment. Go ahead.
So, well, I must say I'm also a customer of John's. Yep. Customer of John's, so he's helped me out with the plumbing aspect just last week. So anyway, but about workforce development and all that, what's going on in the trades, I sit on the Business Advisory Council for Dublin City Schools. Also do a lot of work with Tolls. I don't know if you guys are doing much out at Tolls Career and Technical Center. Yeah, but there's some really good programs that we're trying to do out at Tolls. I know John and I have met out there with Dr. Hoadley. Around building out apprenticeship programs, not only around plumbing, HVAC, all the trades. And we're taking this down also to the middle school level. So that development is happening in a lot of pockets here in Ohio, and you know, especially here in Central Ohio. So you know, we'd love to get involved with you guys as well, have you guys out to Tolls. And then there are gonna be stackable credentials, different programs. We're also at Dublin City Schools have Emerald Campus, where we have Biotech Academy, we have a Cyber Academy, we have a Startup Academy, we have Young Professionals, everything that's coming up through, but we're also giving and preparing our students, especially coming out of Dublin and the other seven counties that service Tolls, options rather than go to college. These kids are coming out of high school diplomas, but also stackable credentials. They're immediately employable. They're going to Columbus State, they're going to Franklin University, and they're all trades related. They're not being pushed to go to college. Some are still going to college, but there's a definite push across all trades, and Tolls is doing some great things out there. So if there's something we can, I can connect you with, if you're not out there already, love to do it.
If I could add to that too, I think there's like what you're saying, making the trade sexy again, making plumbing sexy again. What I've learned even through this fashion initiative is that we engaged a lot of high school students to expose them to the industry that they didn't know existed here. And we found that we are one of the only, you know, components to expose them to that. And I think there's power in that because you have so many, you know, young adults who don't look at college, they don't see themselves, you know, in them spaces, and they're still trying to figure out what is next for them. So while we have this need for trade skills again, how do we, you know, engage our underserved youth? How do we, you know, engage our at-risk youth and really show them, you know, you can build the future, right? You can even build in your own community, but they have no one engaging them and giving them access to teach them these things. I remember when I was a kid, I had there was a nonprofit that hired us to intern for them for the summer to learn how to, you know, build, you know, benches and work with wood and things like that. And we need more of those programs because it's not offered in the schools. So if we want to build a workforce, you have high school students that may not be going to college but are constantly thinking about what's their next. This is a great opportunity to invest into them, invest in the programs, and start to teach them these skills, because at least they know it's guaranteed opportunities for them. If we have jobs on the horizon in the fastest growing city, you know, one of the fastest growing cities in the country, this is where we should be taking the opportunity to engage those who don't have that access.
So Amen. Exactly on that point, thank you. If you follow what we did in Cincinnati, in Chicago,
We also talk about impact investing and philanthropic interests. And there's a whole population that's incarcerated that a large number of them, if they had the roadmap, they had that access, right, mentorships, and there are part of our community is very focused on that. Preventative, too, because it's like we're in this preschool to prison cycle that we got to break. So that would go a long way long term if we could get out ahead on that issue. That's something we'll talk about later this afternoon. And there's a big summit, just a preview, that we're going to in Grand Rapids on the 13th, 14th, 15th of October, leading to a Penn State game, which you guys don't really care about unless you want one to beat the other team just so Ohio State gets where they want to go. Fine. But thank you to this panel. But this is the same theme that Denise is going to hit on. It's the talent piece. So Denise, you want to come up and introduce? You've got a lot of people, so thank you to everybody here. Don't be surprised if you're called back up. Thank you. Thank you, Wolf.
Come join our 361 firm community of investors and thought leaders. We have a lot of events created by the community as we collaborate on investments and philanthropic interests. Join us.